are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Oh, man. How you doing?
Ah, man, great. Take us back.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Hey, can you adjust your screen up just a little bit so we can see the top of your head? There we go.
Okay.
I was telling Kara, who has been emailing you, I said, the last time I remember Ed Jones was that he had hair. He had a big smile. And let me just see if that's still the case. And it is. When I saw Fred last time, I was floored. He was, because it's been so long. You look the same, man.
Yeah, I tell you.
Minus some hair, right?
Right.
Hey, did we meet on the I took a couple tours over there. I don't know if you did. I don't remember. It's been so far back. Were you on both tours?
I was on the first tour.
The first tour. That was quite something, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It has. My life has been changed from the time we came back.
You know what? And I think all of us have said that. To this day, the information that I learned back, from the Bulgarians and that trip, especially the Bulgarians, that really, it still impacts me today in the things that I do, with the things I learned from them. They were so ahead of, they were right. They said, we're about 8 years ahead of the West.
Right.
And we're going to, when I asked them, I said, look, I just want to be transparent here that I'm going to copy this stuff, information down. I want to go back to the States and write a bodybuilding book. And that without any kind of hesitation at all, they said, go for it, because by the time that information gets out, we're going to be down the road and that'll be old news. That's just how they were, But I'll never forget that. And the guys that I met on there, it's been pretty amazing,
Yes, indeed.
That group was so tight.
There were 24 of us that went on that tour.
I know. How did you hear about that tour?
What? I think it was in one of the journals or magazines. And ironically, what happened, I was an administrator in a school and I applied for a grant. And the grant was approved. And the next thing I knew, things began to happen very positively.
Yeah.
As you changed, it impacted you. I was able to come back and implement a program in the schools where I work. And as a matter of fact, we won National Drug-Free Schools recognition from the Secretary of Education, who was Richard Riley at that time. That was in 1994.
Uh-huh.
The whole idea, those concepts made sense, and my kids loved them.
Yeah.
They loved it. And I was able to have clinics for people to be able to benefit from that. And I had summer programs. I mean, it was just great.
It's amazing. So what exactly, specifically, the programs that you're talking about, were they weight training programs? What exactly was it that you were doing?
What I did was took the concept of education and fitness, put it into a summer program.
Okay.
So had part of the day was devoted to education. The other part was devoted to fitness.
Nice.
And we were able to employ students and adults. And it was just amazing. I mean, people, one of the young men from my program improved the speed tremendously. I mean, he ended up going to Ohio State, had a scholarship. And he worked hard on those kinds of things, just basic concepts that they were implementing.
Yeah.
One thing that I really reflect upon is the fact that they worked no more than an hour at a time.
Right. Exactly.
If you go do something else, then you come back.
Right.
And it made sense.
Yeah.
One of the things he said, if you're doing more than that, you're doing something else other than maximizing what is going on.
Right. they were so targeted to the specific goal. They were just late. They were laser, weren't they, in on that? See, it's like for me as a bodybuilder, that was kind of like the opposite for me. For me, it didn't make sense because at that time, what we were doing as bodybuilders was we do all these warm-up sets and then we do what we call the working set.
Right.
So when they said that, you know, you don't have to warm up, that you can be ready on demand and that you should do all this in 30 to 45 minutes, I thought, oh, hell no, there's no way. You know, at that time we were staying in the gym hour and a half or 2 hours.
That's right.
But you know, like anything else, a lot of times you have to take that leap of faith. And I thought, you know what? I'll never really know unless I do that. And that's very difficult when you're bodybuilding because it's so hard to make progress anyway and put on muscle. You hate to take any kind of steps backwards.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, the best thing I ever did was commit to that. And like you said, that's what changed my whole life.
Right.
It created a company for me.
Yes. Fantastic.
That is, you know, so are you still involved in the school system? What are you doing these days?
I have retired with the strength and conditioning. What I did was I worked with strength and conditioning. That moved into administration. I feel I could have a broader impact.
Mm-hmm.
And as an administrator, we had a program that worked with staff and students throughout the District of Columbia, and that went well. Then I moved on to become a principal, and I had the opportunity 1 year to introduce a program as it relates to fitness.
Okay.
What I'm doing now is mentoring young individuals in strength and conditioning, you know, just kind of share with them experiences that I've been a part of with the hopes that they can develop. And recently, one of my colleagues and I were responsible for a chapter in the NSCA's Guide to Strength and Conditioning, a high school guide to strength and conditioning. We're responsible for the first chapter of this book.
Oh, nice. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yes, indeed. And what else I did when I came back from Bulgaria and Russia, that tour, I wrote an article that was in the journal. It just talked about strength and conditioning, how important it is to have certified folk in your school environment. And that's still a battle that is ongoing because there have not been many administrators who really understand the concept, because I don't think, had they gone through it and then become administrators is one thing. They have such a plethora of activities or things they have to accomplish, it kind of puts it on a back burner.
Yeah.
In the chapter that we did, it was chapter one, I talked about how the strength and conditioning physical education person can really get involved with the administrator. Then they can kind of flip the script to kind of support what they're doing.
Yeah.
You have to support them and to get them to support you, because many times as young people, you get so involved, focused on what you're doing, you don't look at the big picture.
Exactly. And
hopefully this will be able to have some impact on some folks as we go forward down the
road. You know something, and you know this as well as I do, that any kind of change is difficult just to begin with. And when you're introducing something that's, I mean, in some ways, you know, like when I was introducing the, you don't have to stretch, stretching, or, you know, you don't have to warm up, stretching is a waste of energy. There were some radical ideas.
Yes.
You know, so you can imagine, it's like, I only had, when I came back, actually, I tried to get, I wrote a program and I tried to get this into the high schools because, as you know, athletes back then, and I still think it's going on, but not quite as much. Athletes back in the late 80s when we did this, there was no real strength and conditioning coaches in high school. It was just the head coach with the assistants did the best they could. And so they really didn't get any attention until they got into college. And unfortunately, for the athletes that don't necessarily have, you know, that pure talent, I think this is when those kids that didn't get that attention in high school could really benefit. Even further back, I think that this should be in the junior high schools if you know what you're doing.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product. Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're gonna get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Yes, absolutely. You know? I agree completely. There was some NSCA folk who really focused on the youth fitness. And I thought that was great. That was really, really great to get them started early, but get them started early supervised. The worst thing you can do is I buy you a set of weights and you go do it on your own.
That's awful.
Correcting terrible techniques.
Oh God, that's awful.
All you could do.
Yeah. And you know, even like the high school coaches, look, I'm not bagging on, because it's like you were saying that they're having to do so many jobs already at that level that it's hard. You know, what we know is we can multitask, but a lot of times when we're multitasking, we're compromising everything that we're doing because of that reason, you know? So they did the best they could, but oftentimes what happens is, and you know this, a lot of these coaches were just five sets of five was kind of the template that you go to. So what ended up happening is that you had kids that were stronger on the field, but they were slower because they never did the explosive movements that had to be a part of that deal, right? So it never translated. So you're 100% right. You have to have that supervision, especially at the younger level. Get them started on the right path from the beginning.
Yes, very much so. Another thing that I don't think we do enough of as strength and conditioning professionals is document what you have accomplished, summarize it so they can see exactly where you were from the beginning and where you are at this particular point in time. You know, 100%. They might be the greatest programs, but at the end, this is a result of what we have done. X number of folks have moved here. And then you coordinate with the coaches. Now, what do you really see that needs to be done? But if they're not on the same page as you are.
Yeah. Too many moving parts going the wrong ways. You know, I learned that lesson the hard way from, I'm sure that you, maybe you heard of Tom Platz.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, he took me under his wing because I had at that point gotten as far as I could with my knowledge. I was writing books, but he took it to another level. One thing that he told me, exactly what you just said, document everything that you're doing.
Right.
Because at some point, you need to look back to move forward. To gather information is to see what you did right, what you did wrong, so you can keep making progress as you want to. Because at that time, Ed, I remember when I was competing, I thought, okay, I'll remember what I did this last time that I got ready for the show. I couldn't really, but I thought I could. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just so amazing. And then there are many great coaches out there who've done quite well, but do they actually document? Or do the average folk document what they do?
Yeah.
You know how you have improved. Many times they get the great athletes, so they're already at this level from the beginning. But if I can take an average athlete and move that person up to the next level, that's worth its weight in gold.
But you know something, Ed, there's a lot of times that, because I watch a lot of sports still, and I like to listen to the backstory or the stories of people who are making it. You know, I'm really fascinated by those stories. And, you know, one of the things that that I keep hearing is that a lot of times the people that make it aren't the most gifted because they have to work hard to reach their full potential.
That's right.
The guy or gal who's naturally gifted, they don't really reach their full potential because they're so good that they don't have to. right?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct. And I've seen that many times, many times.
Yeah.
The other thing that really impressed me with the Bulgarians, when they talked about how they select the people for the schools,
yeah,
they didn't just, they looked at the family and they had them doing things to see, really, this is what you want.
Right.
What are your genetics? What is happening in your family? You have people that work hard. And that makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Sometimes you get athletes that are just gifted, but are they going to take you to that next level? Are they willing to work hard to go to what needs to be done?
Yeah, absolutely. That's paying attention to the small things, but how important is that, right?
Yes.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting when I was there, because I have this misconception, I'm going to the East Block, and these athletes, they're forced to go to school to become athletes. And what I found interesting, at least in Bulgaria, was that from the coaches, my interpretation that I remember learning was they put these athletes in the school, but the things that they had these athletes or these kids, these young kids doing, it was more like playing games. They didn't really know that they were getting necessarily ready for any kind of sport, but the kind of games that they had them playing was given an insight to those coaches as to if that was a red fiber athlete, a white fiber athlete.
Okay. Like,
you see what I'm saying? And I thought that was a misconception. I thought, well, hell, when I came back here, I told the people, I said, those kids are having a ball in those schools. Nobody is being forced to do that. I thought it was ingenious in the way they set that up for the kids.
Yeah.
And then of course, to wrap around, their sport, they had their schooling was all being done. I thought it was a pretty slick deal myself.
I think I love the concept. Love that concept. We just hope that eventually something like that can happen in our environment.
Yeah.
Because you have so many different types of sport, and there has to be, I know there has to be a way.
One of the things that was interesting for me is when I came back, I was all fired up about this information. And I thought, now that the high schools don't have this, I can just implement a program and oversee it. I can teach the coaches how to implement the program, because I'm going to ask you, we're talking about the obstacle. What is the solution? So I thought the solution was, okay, you coaches are busy doing football. Let me create this program that I know is going to work, because I test everything before I do anything out on the field, to make sure that it works. I don't just implement it. And here's what I ran across, Ed, and it had more to do with ego than anything else.
Right.
I had this program. I said, look, I want to teach you how to do it. But they thought I was trying to take over their program in some way. And I'm thinking, you guys, sometimes you got to put your ego aside. Had nothing to do with that. One school did it, and call it luck, call it whatever you will. It just so happens that the school that was on this program, Bulgarian style program, they ended up winning Valley, and they won the whole thing that particular year in football. Now, whether or not it had anything to do with it, but it was a part of it.
That's right. That is so true.
So how do you overcome this stuff? We know that's the obstacle. So how do we change all that, the culture of that?
You know what I think has to happen is we have to develop those persons who want to be strength and conditioning professionals just as we are. And we can't wait until they stumble upon it in college. Somehow we have to look at developing a high school program that lets young people see, hey, this is an opportunity for me. Sure. Yeah. Be an athlete, but after athletics, this is something that I can do. Prime example, one of my high school teammates went on to play in the NFL. He was always heavy into strength and conditioning. After his career was over, the next thing he did was he was a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah.
For a while. But the whole idea is, why not let that be part of your focus in your early stages so that you know that you have options. And plus, you are learning the intricacies of strength and conditioning as well as developing yourself. And that's going to make you better.
Yeah.
result if you decide once you've completed your athletic run, now this is an opportunity.
Absolutely. It's hard to look that far ahead when you're that young.
Right,
Do that to talk, all you want. I mean, if you're talking to me, I'm thinking now me being a teenager like that, you're talking to me about that, I'm thinking, I just want to chase footballs and girls at that age, right?
but the whole idea is coaches, and you see those kinds of skills, just kind of hone in on them slowly.
Yeah.
This is the Bulgarian dude. You know, they're playing games.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
But, oh, now maybe this might be an opportunity.
Yeah.
And we have not even scratched the surface with the opportunities that are available.
Very true.
Conditioning professionals.
Very true. And those people, I know we both speak and say the same thing that I'm about to say, is that they don't know what they're missing out on, because it's for me, it's like, what a dream job for me that I get to do something that I have passion for to this day, that I love. I mean, they don't know what they're missing, but let me ask you something. You've been in that administration like that. Is there actually, because I think in some schools, I don't know if it's all, I don't even think it's a requirement to take PE, for example. I don't know if that's changed or not, but I don't think it's
in some school districts. You are correct. Everything is so political.
Yeah.
But it just does so much. Number one, when they take physical education. Number two, if they get involved in the strength and conditioning classes. I mean, it's the sky's the limit for them. That's why I say document. You take a little frail kid coming in ninth grade, 10th grade. 2 years later, he's built confidence, and it's just strength, and it's amazing what that kind of impact can have upon him as he goes forward.
Well, you know, and especially when you're young like that, not only does it build confidence, but it strengthens ligaments and tendon strength. The Bulgarians, what I learned from them was they said, you know, if you're an athlete that does, and they had some studies that they did to prove that, the younger kids that got into training, even the prepubescent ones, if it was done correctly, when because in athletics we all know that you're going to get hurt at some point.
That's right.
And the fact that you have in your background and as a part of your program, you have this training, you're going to recover half as fast as a person who has no training. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
I mean, just for the simple reason of that would be important among the other things that you're talking about. I mean, there's bullying and everything else that goes way down when you're involved in a program like that because of confidence.
Yes. Yes.
You know, there's a lot of reasons why there should be something like this, and not even related necessarily to sport, but just to build a stronger character younger.
Right. Right. Yes. You know? I agree.
My kids, I have two kids that are a year and a half apart. When I came back from Bulgaria, at that time, they were around, one was about, I think, 9 or 10, and the other one was almost 12. And when I learned about prepubescent training, and that was okay, because all I knew on her up to that point was, well, if you lift, you're going to stunt their growth. That was a half-truth, as we know. Right. But when I learned how good something like this was for them, I told them, I said, look, if you guys are going to plan on playing sports, you're going to be in the gym, whether you like it or not.
Very good.
Because of the stuff that you and I are talking about. And you know something, Ed, what it did more for them is that it became a way of life to them. It was just something that they did at a very young age. Now they're grown men and they have kids. Guess what? They've been in the gym, and they don't do it for bodybuilding reasons. They do it as a part of their daily life, to stay and feel better and stay in shape. And you know what? I don't have to say anything. It was something that that's what we need to be doing. And that's a service to our youngsters, because as you know, one in five children, young children, are obese, and they have high blood sugar. It's pretty sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you think that there'll ever be a way to get this as a, maybe there is already a part of the curriculum where you can take it and get, you know, a grade for it? Is that happening?
You know, when I was at one of my high schools, we had a course like that. I think they're in many of the schools, they have a program, they have a course such as this. They're few and far in between, but creative budgeting in the school and in the school district can help to make that a reality. But there has to be a process of selling it to the school district, the school board, as well as the superintendent. And I know there are isolated programs. To show you how much the strength and conditioning profession has expanded, the NSCA has broken off. They have a college group. They also have an independent high school group. The high school group, I don't know the name of them, but the college group has a certain, they moved from the NSA to develop a high school, a college group, as well as a high school group. And the high school group just broke off recently. But what that shares is there has been growth in one organization, and then people see the opportunity to stretch and go in their own different ways to go forward. But as far as implementation, that's one of the things I would love to be a part of in the foundation of developing that kind of concept, especially with my having been in administration and I understand the ins and outs and the woes of administration. And I just feel like given the right opportunity, the right circumstances, I would be happy to help in any way that we could go forward with that.
I think that it has to be somebody like you that knows it from the ground up. It's kind of like what's going on in the industry as far as personal trainers, because that's kind of where I live in personal training, you know, that industry pretty much. And so many of these people, look, I think social media really has its upside, but it also has the other side, because what's happening now in my industry with personal trainers is that they're learning it from YouTube, and that's okay, but they're not learning it from the ground up. And there's something to be said about learning it from the trenches and how it really works. And that's why they need somebody like yourself who's been in it at that level.
Right.
Because you can put all the pieces together, but it's like a huge uphill climb both ways. It seems like, based on what you're telling me, to get this off the ground, right?
Yes. But I just feel there is an opportunity. But from having seen it from my vantage point as an administrator, I know what it takes to, I have a good idea what it takes to make it work so that it becomes effective.
Yeah.
Having worked in Washington, D.C., you know, that's where a lot of things are going on. And to have had support, had to be creative and some of the approaches that we use to implement the program that we have.
Right.
And most times when you implement programs, it's you get a grant or something. And then once it takes off, then it kind of holds its own.
Yeah.
The problem is getting it to take off. And the biggest challenge deals with your principals, your school boards, athletic
directors. Yeah.
It's challenge. I would say challenge, because if you can get those individuals on board to see the long-term benefit of it, the sky is the limit. Most of the athletic programs, and football-wise, that have, in our area, have been successful, they have some type of program, but it goes far beyond just the athletic program. You're talking right. The everyday student walking down the hall.
Right.
It will just do so much for them as individuals. And that's my passion. I really would like to have the opportunity to be able to develop that some kind of way to have an impact. Impact.
Ed, I just think, and I know there's reasons for it, and I have my own ideas about why, but I just can't believe, you know, we all, there's enough of us that know that, you know, putting somebody like this on a program, I mean, like I said, if nothing else, it teaches them about discipline, following through. I think there's enough of us that understand that at that level of administrators, athletic directors, people that you're talking about.
Right.
To me, it's a no-brainer. And I don't really understand. I mean, I do know, like, maybe with athletics, people can see that they could put more money or whatever into that because it's athletics. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm talking out my rear end, but it's like, okay, football is going to bring us some money at the gate, a little bit of offset that. I don't know if that's if that factors in, but it's like, why is it that it's a no-brainer. It's something good for our young people. Why isn't that more of a priority?
I think what has to happen, we as the strength and conditioning professionals have to make a concerted effort to unite our approach. And we can't just do it in one place across the country. If we have a group in certain areas that we target, because if we look at the beginning of the NSCA, it started out in Nebraska. My involvement in the NSCA, when it first came out, I was excited about it. They came to Pittsburgh. I came to Pittsburgh to the conference, completely enthralled. I spoke with Ken Conta, told him I wanted to get involved, be a state director. He said, write me a letter. I wrote him the letter the same day, put it in his hands. And he said, I'm impressed. And then I got involved. But what I'm sharing is, the whole idea is, if we get a few like-minded folk with the same idea of expanding it to where its potential can really expand, I think this will give us a real opportunity to have that impact that we really want to have that goes far beyond the athlete's life, et cetera. Of course, we're not competing with other activities, other organizations. The whole idea, we all have one goal in mind, is to advance what we're doing as it relates to serious growth.
So, and that means serious growth means a lot in a lot of different ways as far as the growth of an individual. I totally agree with that. Let me ask you this, because I don't know. I mean, I got like you, I got certified as a strength and conditioning specialist, CSCS. Is the NSCA still doing all that after all these years?
Yes, they are. They have additional certifications, but the CSCS, once again, is the basic foundation for strength and conditioning. And one of the things in that, the article I did when I came back from Bulgaria and Russia, focused on that, just kind of talking about that a little bit. But once again, it's the whole concept of expanding it to the schools has to be a united effort with a few folks.
Yeah.
Committed to getting it done, and I'm ready to be on board.
Because I'm always interested in leveraging, if I can make it a win-win, I'm always interested in leveraging relationships, you know, if it makes it better and no one's getting more than the next person. I'm not into that. But I guess what I'm asking is that this relates to what you're saying. Is there any possible way that you could see that you could leverage the NSA or, you know, the NSCA that could tie into turning people around at these levels that you're talking about? Is there any way to leverage that? Because it seems to me that, I don't know, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, when I came back from Bulgaria, back in those days in my town, no one knew what the hell a personal trainer was. They said, right. What? They said, are you an aerobics instructor? And so my point that I'm getting to is that I learned pretty early on that I had to educate people as to why they needed somebody like me.
Right. Okay.
And I'm just thinking, okay, is that kind of the situation right now? Do we need to, there's a need to be a group that is educating people as to why we need to do this based on the conversation that you and I are having right now?
Yes, I agree. I agree. Ironically, I had an opportunity in a school district where an individual athletic director had someone to have something happen, not positive, dealing with strength and conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I invited him to the conference. They were in our area. And we were beginning to work on developing a program, a beginning program for the coaches. We had bad weather, some other things happened. But the bottom line is that individual retired. So when one person retires, you like starting out over again.
Right.
That was a step in that kind of direction. And because I think once you get it in, you get a solid foundation with it. The sky's the limit. The sky is the limit. And it's there's so much involved that they just don't realize careers,
yeah.
Opportunities.
Maybe you're that guy, and maybe you're already doing this because maybe you're that guy that needs to be at the head of the table and lead the charge on this thing, because it seems to me that, you know, it's like building momentum or building a right. foundation. You got to find one of the guy that is a mind like mind of Edwin Jones.
Okay.
And you know, you start there because, like you said, what I'm hearing from you is that there's not enough critical mass. One guy leaves, it's kind of like, okay, we got to start completely over.
Right.
Somebody that can fill that spot. And again, I don't know the answers. I've gotten into the habit, good or bad, when I'm talking to people, because I talk to a lot of clients who, you know, when I'm doing a consultation, all I'm hearing from them are perceived obstacles that they have for the reasons that they've never followed through. You know, and if they're coming to me as a someone who they want to meet a guide, I have to know what's going on at the root cause as to, you know, why you're not, so I'm all I see many times for people, more than the actual obstacle being a real obstacle, it's just something that they use to make them feel better. It's right. like, I couldn't do it because of this,
right. that,
you know what I mean? And I don't know. I automatically go in solution mode. And that's why I keep going to you and saying, okay, so what do you do? What's the next step that you do or somebody does to get this darn thing off the ground? You know, what's that first step? Because it sounds like you're the guy that these people need. You're like a horse that's got a bit in his mouth and you're being held back, right?
Okay.
So where do you go from? I don't know. I'm just simply posing the question, you know, to find the solution for this thing.
I'm going to give it some real serious. I think about this a lot, you know. And I have a few ideas of how to possibly approach it. But I guess you gotta try to have a small group of individuals that maybe we can talk about this and possibly look at some opportunities, because the structure is already out there. It's out there from what they have done. It's just a matter of trying to start and develop it in an environment where we can be pretty much assured it's going to be successful. Then we replicate it from that particular area. And I just think that's something I would like to do. I would like to do it. And whatever it takes for us to get it started, you know, I I welcome the opportunity.
The when you're talking about a program, I assume that it has to do kind of like when I took the CS or that certification test. Part of it was application, part of it was theory. Now, I'm assuming that what you're talking about is part of it is the education of strength and conditioning that goes into it. And then part of it is actually the application of it. Do I understand that?
Right, yes. But then the other part of that is, in order for you to experience success, you need to find the environment that is receptive for that. If we go to an environment where there are many obstacles that would kind of make this a very high road to climb, then that might not be the best place to start.
I agree.
If there's certain elements that are in place that can kind of help to guide you along. When I say elements, I mean like a receptive board, a receptive superintendent, athletic director, et cetera, to kind of help to move you in that direction, then I think we would have a great opportunity to make it, to create it as a success.
Let me ask you this. Again, I'm going to solution mode with you, Ed. We're going to figure this thing out today.
Okay.
All right. How about, or have you done this already? Because I have a in my clientele here at my one studio that I still have left, I have an assistant superintendent, and I know about board meetings, and I've spoken to these some of the groups because of the kids being out of shape. I've come up with programs to take all the reasons why they can't get here to get to the gym. And I would do this for basically little or no charge just to create discipline. So what about if you started first at the school boards? What about if you were that person that came in and said, let me tell you about something that's going to be really beneficial, all the things that we're talking about. Have you tried going that route where you're talking to actual school boards?
I have not gone that far yet, but that's a good idea. That's a very good.
I almost think that that might be the first place based on what you're telling me. And I don't know that much about it. I know there's a lot of, bureaucracy, and there's a lot of hoops that you got to jump through that I don't have to jump through as being a private, business. I get that because I know I hear the frustration and the superintendent that is a client. So I know some of that, but I'm almost thinking, based on the individuals that are at that board, that might be because you have a group of people, I think, that there's a variety of individual that you're talking to as far as mindset and where they're at and what they want. That might just be you have a group of people right there that's captive. And I think if you came in and said, look, here's the reasons why, here's all the benefits to doing this. And like you said, I think what's smart is start really small and have and then – if you do too big, it's going to be too overwhelming. That's if you do it small, real small, and you're successful at it, and you can show documentation, the improvement in all these areas, not just athletic, why the hell wouldn't people want to do that? You know what I mean? It's like I tell these clients that come in with a consultation, and I say, okay, because usually in my world, there's three components that are responsible for changing the body in the most efficient way. And you could arguably say there's a fourth component, but the three main components in my mind is resistance training, cardiovascular conditioning, nutrition. Those are the three, I call them the three crucial components that must be implemented in a program together coherently towards the stated goal. That's the Bulgarian. I'm just real lasered to the stated goal.
Okay.
Even leaving one of those out. Okay. So let's just talk about in those three components, clients in my world usually struggle the most with nutrition. Okay. And because the misconception is they think that you have to eat so clean and you have to give up so much and that diet becomes a nasty word. And it's always been a nasty word. But I've told clients before, because I figured out a way, because that's the obstacle. So I go into solution mode. And I said, if I tell you I can create a diet for you that is based mainly around the foods that you love. Because, you know, Ed, you don't really have to give anything completely up. You have to do it in moderation. We know that as we get older, right?
Yes.
That's the truth. If I told you, Ed, that I can create a diet that's based on the foods that you love for the most part, you mean I'm not going to have to abstain from anything? No. Why wouldn't you follow that program? And I'm going to tell you something. You'll be surprised. This is how big of an uphill battle it is. And I'm relating to what you're going through in maybe a smaller way. I can design sometimes a program many times for people that it's just based on the foods that they love and they still can't follow through.
Mm.
That's a real frustrating thing for me as a personal trainer, because I can't. And what I've, the hard truth is this, and I have no issue with telling my customer, my client this ahead of time. I said, look, the only reason that you won't do this program in my mind, because I've knocked down the perceived obstacles. Because first thing I do when I'm in a consultation, and like I can picture myself being in front of a board like you would be, is I would say, what is it that you're questioning? What's your, you know, tell me what you think as to why we can't do this. Or client, why do you think you can't do this? So I listen to what they're telling me. They're telling me the obstacles. So I knock down the obstacles and I come up with an immediate solution for them, right? And I said, okay, I've knocked down all the obstacles. And sometimes that's still not enough, because the root cause a lot of times is that, you know, the discipline is just not there. It's something that wasn't done ahead of time. Like I'm saying that we need to do this ahead of time with our kids. The discipline is just not there in these adults that I'm dealing with. Right. It goes back further than that, you know, then what they've done to this point is they've used these obstacles, perceived obstacles, as a reason why they can't, you know, do this as a lifestyle. It doesn't have to be that hard if you understand how to do this, but you've got to put some work into it. The school board, we have to put some work into these young people to make them better adults, for goodness sake. I'm making this sound way too black and white and easy. And I know it's way more than that, but that's kind of my view on this.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And then just listening to what you have said, when we had our program, I even had the opportunity to bring in a sports psychologist to speak at one of the sessions. Matter of fact, he was a psychologist for the Buffalo Bills. I can't recall what his name was, but he spoke at the session. And that's just another approach. Just thinking about what you said, the people, and then they have to see it in their mind. They have to really believe it.
Yeah. And what we get into, again, my world, I'm not saying it's happening in there. Okay. It's kind of like, I call it shiny object syndrome, SOS. And our society is now, we're marketed to such that, like, even like quick fix diets, you know, there's a shiny object over here. People like to do the shiny object, and then all of a sudden they lose interest in that shiny object, and they think that this shiny object is going to be the answer. And what it really comes down to is, no, you have to do a certain amount of work for a certain amount of time to where it becomes your new normal, your new way of doing this on a daily, you know what I mean? That's the real difference.
Yeah.
We got to break that chain, that cycle. And it's very difficult. You can't save people because they won't save themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's frustrating. So I feel your pain, you know, in a certain way, but maybe the school boards are the answer. Who knows?
That's right. School boards coordinating with the parents in the community, athletic program, the principal. I think that if you get all those on board when you're going forward, you have a support. But if we just go to the school board as one individual and you don't have your support system,
right,
that won't work. At least
the reason why I say school boards, because I think at school boards, you have parents of kids they have kids.
Right.
And I think that if those people can relate to what you're saying, if I'm a mom and a dad and I can't see the benefit of making my young person, my young kid, better, a better individual, forget about athletics, because athletics is just something that they'll do along the way. If that school board, if that those people can't say honestly, oh my goodness, I can just see the total value in that. I just think that would be a huge step in the right direction. And it's like you build momentum through the parents that are on the school board, and then we go to those athletic director or whoever else you want to go. I don't know, Ed. You know, I want to be, by nature, I just like to figure things out for people, and sometimes I just can't.
But you have really provided me some additional insight as to approaches to be able to make this become a reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I almost think that there's what I'm hearing from you. I almost think it's like somebody has to take like that first step and say, okay, right here. And it might be the wrong step, but at least you'll get, you know, you'll
get immediate
feedback from that and say, wrong place to go. Right.
But that's all right. You're right. If you step, one thing for sure, if nothing else, well, I won't do that the next time. You know,
it's immediate feedback. You know,
that's good. That's
but you got to be willing to take that step. And I can just tell you as a bodybuilder, when I'm making a change in my program, I have to be willing to take that step to make that commitment like I did with the Bulgarians. Right. But there's a part of me that just really doesn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm being honest with you, I'm like freaked out about any kind of setback and I don't want to change anything.
Right.
Yeah. It's a hard thing. It seems like, at least in bodybuilding, everything seems to be counterintuitive. So much. It's like when you think that you should be eliminating water out of your body right before a competition to get ripped and show more, it's actually the opposite. You actually want, a few days before, you want to increase water intake to eliminate water. Okay. And yet the thinking is that, okay, if I want to get as dry as possible, I just need to cut water. That's not the whole picture. You have to be willing to drink a bunch of water 4 or 5 days out before the show. And that mindset right before that show, you're a little bit insane to begin with because you're so close to competing, right? Wow. It's kind of crazy, you know? But anyway, are you still doing, are you still a part of the NSCA then?
Yes, I am.
Tell us what you're doing.
I'm a member attending. You know, I was fortunate enough when I came back to be the first African American to serve on the board of directors. I went on the board of directors in 94. 89, I received an award for the regional state director. And then I served on the item analysis committee in 2001, where we identified the items for the NSCA exam. And so that was good, but you know, as I got more deeply into administration, things kind of turned a little bit, but it was okay. I kept my membership.
Okay.
It's good, which is very, very good.
Well, let me say this, this has been an interesting, you know, I love having people come on from different walks of life and getting into like what's going on in your world, because it's fascinating to me. You know how so many things are different, but they're kind of the same, as I've learned as I've gotten older, you know.
Right.
And one of the things about my podcast is I like to show even though we're different from different walks of life, exercise and diet impact us to some degree.
Right.
Big, and some bigger than others. And I'll tell you what, as we're getting older, you got to start doing more things right, so you don't end up in a damn hospital. Right. You know, so it's always important. I just want you to know that if there's anything that I can do with you as a collaboration.
Okay.
You know, I love being around people who have passion for what they do. Obviously, you're one of those people. And I don't know how to fix things sometimes, but I'm open to it.
Okay.
And, you know, if you ever come up with any kind of an idea, or listen, it doesn't hurt to talk. My dad always used to say that, you know, some of these people that were older back then that I didn't listen to because I was too stupid and young, they were pretty smart. You know, one of the things my dad told me, he said, it doesn't hurt to talk. It doesn't hurt to talk about this stuff.
That's right.
You never know where it goes from there, and then just be proactive. So I'm down for anything. You know, I know that with the what's his name that came on here, Kara? Oh God, I'm getting old. I slipped my mind. Roadmeister Fred.
Oh, Fred, and, right.
Yeah, with Fred coming on, and it's like I told these guys, look, we're a tight group forever because of that Bulgarian trip, right?
Yeah.
Dave Pavao. You don't remember Dave Pavao?
Right, okay. Right.
So I've had him on. We're all of that same mindset. And in fact, Fred and I and Pavao are putting together potentially us doing these seminars together. And basically the whole premise of that is just to keep teaching people and motivating people about the real information that's out there. Okay. And I want to extend that olive branch to you, sir, because, you know, anything that we can do together, I'm always about that. You know, seriously, I mean that. You know, so, you know, if you ever want to get back and say, hey, I got an idea, let's do this thing. Why not? What else are we going to do?
Absolutely. Let me ask you one other concept. You spoke about the training, the nutrition. What about rest in the equation for development?
I'm going to tell you what the Bulgarians taught me. As far as recovery, because that's what you're talking about, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Rest, night's sleep, et cetera. Okay.
That, yeah. What they said was if you train, keep your training sessions within 30 to 45 minutes.
Right.
It's virtually impossible to overtrain the physiology. I never forgot that. And that's the reason why, if you remember, they would do sessions like 20 minutes long and they would train five times a day because they were never overtrained.
That's right.
So think about that. Don't overtrain to begin with, and you don't have that issue. You're always recovered. It's the quality of what you're doing more than it is the quantity. And sometimes,
that's right.
You know what I mean? And I think that, and I don't know if that answered your question, but it's like, don't overtrain to begin with. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you need your rest. I think people, there's depending on your natural makeup, I don't know if we all need 8 hours of sleep. I mean, I don't function that way. So I don't know if rest, you know, coming up with a default number for rest like that for sleep, but I think sleep is obviously very important, just like I think to a degree, so is nutrition, you know, it's especially dealing with the young people. It's creating something that is not so much damn work that they'll just do it for a while.
That's right.
That's just too much work. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, would you like to, while you're on the program, for anybody that's watching you, would you like to promote and anything that you have, a website or anything like that? Or, and if you don't, that's fine too.
We have one, but, we haven't upgraded it. Yes.
Okay.
But, this has been a wonderful experience. And I look forward to us going forward with some ideas, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to benefit.
I think, I think if that the next step is maybe just the like-minded people, you and I are like-minded. If we can bring somebody on, and if it starts in a forum like this, you know, before we take that next step, I think that some positive step needs to be taken forward. Because, you know, 80% of launching a business is getting out of the blocks.
Right.
That's the hard part. That's right. Like when even airplanes, the hard part is taking off and landing. When you get up there, it's a little bit easier when you're cruising, right? You still have to do the work. But I just think, Ed, here's the thing I would think about if I was you. The next step that I take has to be something closer to the vision that you have. Because I think I understand it to some degree because we're in the same, basically the same line of work in some ways. And I think that's the next step. It's got to be something that gets you closer to that goalpost, I guess, you know?
Right.
And anyway, that's just my view. And I want to say this, and like I told Dave and Fred, this seeing you today, I haven't talked to you in how many years, and yet, you know something, the minute you come on, it's like we never left off. And I think that's huge in a lot of ways, because I don't have hardly any relationships that have this kind of connectiveness. And I mean that. I just don't. And it's all because of a trip that we took together.
Yes, it is.
You know? Anyway, hey, when you have any updates or anything for us, please reach out. If you have anybody that you want to bring on, so we can, you know, discuss more ideas, I'm really open to all this stuff.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay.
Great. All right.
Sounds good, Ed. Very nice seeing you. It's been an honor having you on my program. Well, hopefully we talk soon.
But thank you so much for reaching out.
Okay.
All right.
Take care. Ciao. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.